much heat and often so little light. That's how the debate around a border poll often feels. And over the weekend, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin dismissed the idea that such a vote could happen by 2030. And once again, it reignited questions about who actually gets to call it. What does the Good Friday Agreement really say? And when might a vote on unity take place? It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. Now, the rules on a border poll are often spoken about in a kind of shorthand, that if it looks like a majority in the North would vote for a united Ireland, then the Secretary of State must call a referendum. But look like, that's a great phrase. What does it actually mean? Who decides? How much discretion is involved? And if the vote is not likely to happen before the end of this decade, as Micheál Martin suggests, then when should we expect one? Well, to take us through the mechanics and the politics, because there's always plenty of politics when it comes to border polls, I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, who's a law lecturer in the Southeast Technological University. And you're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, the talk of United Ireland is some that we're seeing in the media more and more in recent weeks because of the presidential election. It seems that they all favour this idea of a United Ireland. But we saw the Taoiseach at the weekend firmly ruling out the idea that there would be a border poll before 2030.
There won't be a border poll before 2030. So I don't think the word border poll in itself, I believe in terms of, ultimately I do believe, I think it makes logical sense that we would have unity in the country and that we would unite the people of Ireland, but it's in the Wolfe Tone framework. It does matter. It's in the Wolfe Tone framework of uniting Protestant, Catholic and the centre. But you can add to that the New Irish Now and different manifestations.
Why was he sending out that political signal, do you think?
Well, to be fair, since Brexit, we've had a lot more talk about a border poll because it's no longer been an issue that has been rooted in certain traditions. And as we know, one tradition will be absolutely against it. One tradition would be perfectly in favour of it. But where you're seeing the difference now is the big farmers, and it's always the big farmers who like to see their cap coming in or their subventions coming in, have not seen it. We've had seen all the issues there with, you know, hard border, soft border, medium border, well to mid, middle to well done border, like a steak at this stage. And that has brought it out of the strong traditional positions to more the economic realities of what's going on. So it has been very, very much studied now academically. So, for example, the Royal Irish Academy have a section dealing with the homework, not just the law, the constitution, the politics, the sociology is being brought in, the economics is being brought in. And, you know, even though Sinn Féin are not making the gains that they would like to see in the elections down here, they are still a political force to be reckoned with. And it is also becoming down here more of an issue of, well, sure, look, we're coming up to the 100th anniversary. We never thought it would go on so long. So there's a lot of factors that are pulling it into the mainstream and not just a traditionalist type of perspective. So when it comes to what Micheál Martin said, you know, to be fair to Micheál Martin, he can say what he wants, but the provisions on if we're to have a border poll or not comes down to the McCord judgment, which was interpreting the Good Friday Agreement. And it's also an issue with our constitution in Ireland as well, because we've had changes there on how we would go about it. But essentially, it comes down to the Secretary for State, as you said, and they are the ones who make the call on it. From the way we're reading it out of the Irish Constitution from Accord, it's going to have to be a vote on both sides on the same day, because you don't want to have, say, the North saying yes and Ireland having 5 days to think about their yes and then make a decision, or vice versa. So again, Micheál Martin can say what he wants about it, but it is not a decision for Micheál Martin or whoever holds the office of Taoiseach at that time. It is a Westminster problem.
So for clarity, Jennifer, the border poll, when it happens, as laid out under the Good Friday Agreement, will be triggered by the UK, not by Ireland.
Correct. And remember, it's not just the Good Friday Agreement, because we had the old Articles 2 and 3 here, which was trying to say the entirety of the island of Ireland was ours, which was given certain people of the DUP conniptions about it, say the cheek of them calling us part of them. We then changed it as part of our concessions under the Good Friday Agreement, which said that Ireland won't be reunified or united, whatever terminology you want to use on it, unless it is democratically expressed on both sides of the border. So that would be a vote, almost like the vote that they had in Northern Ireland on the Good Friday Agreement. And around the same time, we were having the vote on will we amend Articles 2 and 3, which is our yes to the Good Friday Agreement. So it would have to be an all-Ireland vote, which is triggered by Westminster, but nobody on the Westminster side of the seaboard will be having a vote on it.
The phrase that you hear time and time again is, if it appears likely that it would succeed, it could be called. I mean, in legal terms, you don't get much vaguer than that. I mean, how is appears likely judged? And who thought that wording was a good idea?
Sure, lawyers love vague wording because A, it means that they have loads of costs for any court applications and it gives everyone wriggle room. So I suppose the best thing they can do is look at polling. And there's also a certain amount of good faith that is needed here because there was a fear with the previous government that they would trigger the poll, say it's a once in a generation thing, knowing there was no chance of it going to go through. And then if you look at the parallels with Scottish independence, they would then turn around and say, well, we don't care what you think now. You've had your choice and that's the end of it. And they've had a major change with Britain being taken out of the EU, which Scotland would not like. So, you know, they have to be careful. And you also don't want a situation where, now I have discussions with people in the north about this because I'd be saying, if it was me making the decision, I would want to see the opinion polls around 70% on both sides. Because you don't want a 52-48 like what you had with Brexit. You know, you are dealing with communities that have very, very strong feelings and are very sensitive. And you don't want to bring them in where they would feel like they are not represented because we've already seen how the Brexit vote has caused issues in Northern Ireland, with a small bit circulating around Belfast being in favour of leaving the EU, but the vast majority geographically saying, no, we want to stay in the EU. So even though it would be a constitutional referendum for us, it would be a straight, is the majority of the people who are turning up to vote in favour of this or against it? When you're dealing with issues of identity, you need something a little bit more than that. Now, when it comes to the constitution, you know, our referendums are just, is it 50.00001 in favour will carry the day. But when it comes to that sort of a situation and living with the repercussions of that vote, you really want a lot of people in favour of this. You don't want to take a chance. And it's not like a company where you can have your special resolution, 75% of the like. It's just a plain mathematical majority.
And you mentioned the polls there. So you say, look, you'd want to be seeing it on both sides of the border, up at around 70%. And obviously you'd want to see that.
For me.
For
that's
you,
only
yes.
For me. Other people will say other amounts, but for me, I think that's the safest.
But how many polls are we talking about? And over what period of time and what level of consistency would we want to see in those polls?
Exactly. As Disraeli said, there's lies, damned lies, and there's statistics. And it can come back to that very good clip from Yes Prime Minister, where they were trying to do the survey on do you believe in national service? And you can frame the questions in a way that is leading to the answer that you want.
Well, the party have had an opinion poll done. It seems all the voters are in favour of bringing back national service.
Well, I have another opinion poll done showing the voters are against bringing back national service.
We can't be for it and against.
Of course they can, Bernard. This nice young lady comes up to you. Obviously, you want to create a good impression. You don't want to look a fool, do you? Mr. Woolley, are you worried about the number of young people without jobs?
Yes.
Are you worried about the rise in crime among teenagers?
Yes.
Do you think there's a lack of discipline in our comprehensive schools?
Yes.
Do you think young people welcome some authority and leadership in their lives?
Yes.
Do you think they respond to a challenge?
Yes.
Would you be in favour of reintroducing national service? Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you would, Bernard. After all you've told you, can't say no to that. So, alternatively, the young lady can get the opposite result.
How?
Mr. Woolley, are you worried about the danger of war?
Yes.
Are you worried about the growth of armaments?
Yes.
Do you think there's a danger in giving young people guns and teaching them how to kill?
Yes.
Do you think it's wrong to force people to take up arms against their will?
Yes.
Would you oppose the reintroduction of national service?
Yes.
There you are, you see, Bernard. The perfect balanced sample.
It is a complicated situation. They have not helped themselves with being so vague. The only parallel I could look at would be, say, repeal the 8th. So for years, you had opinion polls saying that the vast majority of Irish people are not in favour of the situation that is there. Now, whether the situation was gradually, you know, put in exceptions and put in subsections to the constitutional article, people were not agreeing to removing the grounds for suicide and the like. So you could see there was a groundswell of support behind that. But again, like repeal, the Irish people can be in one position, but the people who are actually working the mechanics of bringing in a referendum could be about 5 years behind people as well. If it was to be opinion poll based, it would have to be a number of different polling companies. It would have to be a couple of years of polling on this. And then, of course, you're going to have political scientists who are very good at statistics, because, you know, one of their main areas is looking at data and numbers, and even mathematicians double checking all the homework on this to make sure it is as good as you could nearly get. Add into that as well that since Articles 2 and 3 have been changed, we have had, say, the Citizens' Assembly, we've had the Constitutional Convention. The Constitutional Convention did take in people north and south of the border. So if Ireland could run the show on the nod and the wink to Westminster that we'll do the homework here for you and we'll tell you when we're ready to go, it would probably end up going through a Citizens' Assembly type approach, both north and south. At least with the Royal Irish Academy doing so much homework to the Irons Project, there is a lot more there that we can work on that is not just the traditions and the sensibilities on both sides in the north. And it would be a pathway of looking at how we could actually shape an idea of a reunified, united Ireland that isn't just, well, we want to make sure we can still keep marching on the 12th and we want a bank holiday, all the ways down to, is Sláinte Ó Cadhain actually going to be the best way to run an All-Ireland health service? Because remember, people in the north are going to be looking at the HSE, they're going to be looking at the NHS, they're going to be looking at the housing regulations that are being run in the north, looking at what's down here. And honestly, when we get to a sort of debate, when we're looking at, well, do we want the NHS or the HSE, that's probably when we're at the position to run the border poll, because we've taken the heat out of the language around it in many ways.
But even if you did have all of those polls, all of that data, all of the debate, all of the discussion, it's all edging towards a border poll, the decision rests with the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. How much discretion do you think they have?
Under the McCord judgment, it's set now as precedent. It is the Secretary for State for Northern Ireland. Now, obviously, you know, this is a diplomatic process. There will be diplomats on both sides talking, and they are people who are excellent at their job of talking in language that is not reactionary and trying to frame it correctly. To be fair, we have had an awful lot of exchange diplomatically with the interparliamentary bodies. There's so much work going on an all-island basis, and also across what I like to call the Celtic archipelago, not the British Isles, on how we actually work towards this.
The Celtic archipelago, I'm going to adopt that. That's lovely.
Yes.
I want to visit
Celtic
that place.
Exactly, yes. So when it comes to all those bodies work between, you know, there is good work being done here to create that template of how we could work. For example, we've All-Ireland tourism strategies. Waterways Ireland is the island. If you break your leg in Donegal, you're going to Atnagelvin outside Derry. If you've got a heart condition and you're a child in Belfast, you're coming down the road to Dublin. So things are working well on that level. And I would personally argue that the more we can try and embed those things together, the less stranger danger will be felt by certain traditions who would not be the most, you know, enthusiastic about an All-Ireland, that they can see how things are working and it's not just a them and us type situation.
Now, you say there that the McCord judgment makes it clear the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland has the final say here. But Sam McBride, who's the Northern Ireland editor of the Belfast Telegraph, he wrote in recent days that Westminster Parliament actually holds a veto on any vote.
What's not in the section of the Northern Ireland Act 1998, which sets out that power that we all go to and look at when we think about this, is that in a completely different section of this law, which is more than 100 pages long, a huge document, very tough to get through if you're not a lawyer, there's a different section which says that for the purposes of the section in which there is a border poll power, Parliament has to vote on this. And it's not just the Commons, it's the House of Lords. or it cannot happen. Now, I find this remarkable. In some ways, this might be completely by the by. If you've got a government with a massive majority, if Parliament agrees with the Secretary of State, this could simply be a box-ticking exercise.
Is that correct?
Well, it's the real politics of the situation, because obviously the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland comes from the majority party. And if the majority party is of a certain perspective on what way to go about this, that's what the Prime Minister will be telling the Secretary for State to do. Now, traditionally, you know, Labour has been that little bit more, looking at the history of things, has been quite constructive with the relations between Ireland, Britain, and also the Northern Ireland question. So, of course, it'll come down to what the party feels on the realpolitik basis. But it is the official, you know, ministerial order, as we'd call it down here, will be the Secretary for State for Northern Ireland.
How likely is a legal challenge, do you think, if the Secretary of State did refuse to call a poll despite, let's say, consistent polls showing majority support for unity?
Oh, quite high, because we even had a court challenge down here in McGimsey, which was Ireland's ability to sign up to some of the Northern Ireland agreements. And they were of the unionist tradition who were coming down here and saying, under your old Articles 2 and 3, the way you phrased the article is the reunification will be a case of if, not when. So you guys can't go around like that TIAD and say, ah, sure, listen, that's only political talk. Don't mind that. But that's only semantics. And the court was of the opinion that, guys, you haven't written down the Constitution that this is a case of if rather than when. So watch the way you're dealing with this. So you've had people who traditionally wouldn't recognise the Irish courts coming down and using the Irish courts to query the way Ireland was dealing with this. Absolutely, I can see multiple court challenges from both sides nearly, if it is a case that we have had 10 years of consistent opinion polling and that is looking for a border poll and being open to a border poll and not actually getting that goal.
You mentioned there what happened in Scotland. Obviously, they got their opportunity, they got their border poll and it lost. And you hear it as sort of a conversation amongst the political class in Scotland time and time again. It's an ongoing conversation, and yet there seems to be absolutely no appetite down south in Westminster for there to be a second poll on independence for Scotland. So what are the risks, I suppose, of calling a poll too soon?
And I mean, you don't want a situation here where you've put so much focus on the numbers in the north that you haven't looked at the numbers in the south, because you could end up with the north saying yes, Ireland saying no, and then it's like a couple that are trying to get back together. One party thinks, oh, this is great, we're going to pretend that nothing ever happened, and the other person's only showing up to the coffee because they want their toothbrush back.
You know, that they didn't do very, the therapy, they didn't talk it out. You got to talk it out, isn't that right, Jennifer?
Exactly. And that's the exact point. It needs to be talked out. You have to look at it like a relationship where one has gone one way, the other's gone the other. And are they going to be happy to come back together again? And that's essentially what it is. And we need to ensure that all the planning and the homework is done. So it's not just, it's almost like the last general election, the way people were saying, oh, the left never got their act together. We need to be able to sell the idea of what this is going to look like before people trust the politicians to see what way the direction of Northern Ireland, Ireland reunified otherwise, will actually go. And it needs to be realistic and accommodating of all those different viewpoints.
So speaking of opinion polls, Jennifer, what is the public mood now? What do the polls on this issue suggest?
It's kind of havering around the middle from the last time I looked at it. And one thing I always do with my students is I don't ask them whether they vote yes or no. I just ask them, do they see in their lifetime a united Ireland or a unified Ireland coming about? And there's always about half the class that would be, yes, we could see it happening. Last year, my first years was the first year where the people who thought they could see it happening were in the minority. And yet 3 years concurrently previous to that, nearly 75% of the class could see it happening. And there's another issue that could be a court challenge. And again, it would be something similar to Scotland. How low are we going to bring the voting age for this? Because obviously, if you're 16, by the time it's implemented, you will be 18. This is what you'll be looking at for your reality. And it's going to bring in a lot of side issues into that of the voting age. Do we recognise or do we give a voice for the Irish people who are living abroad? A lot of issues that are active during this current presidential campaign on voting rights will also come up when it comes to any sort of border poll, because we do have a lot of people who are living outside of Ireland. who, say, are only gone for 4 years, but they can't actually vote down here. They've gone past their 18 months. But if they're coming back to Ireland, this will be a reality they will have to live with.
Jennifer, in our conversation for the last 20 minutes, you said 10 years, you know, consistent polls over about a 10-year period, conversations, debates about what a united Ireland would look like. Is that when you think a border poll is realistic?
Yeah, well, we're certainly not looking at any time before 2030. I think I would agree with Micheál Martin on that, but it's more on the realities of having the proper discussions. But my fear is that if it keeps getting pushed off and pushed off, it will just fall off the narrative. There'll be something else to add to housing and healthcare, which will be the biggest issues. So while there's going to be pressure now coming around, especially coming up to the anniversary of our constitution, 1937, so that'll be 2037. You know, I'm not a psychic. I'm not like you're one of the traitors who could figure out every single traitor.
Come on, you have a crystal ball there, your legal crystal ball, Jennifer.
Well, I mean, I am from Waterford. If there's going to be a crystal ball anywhere, it could be down with Waterford Crystal. But the one thing I would say is we need to have more movement around the island, because like there's people down, say, on the Barra Peninsula who have never been in Northern Ireland. There's a lot of people in South Leinster, the Munster area, who wouldn't go to Belfast, even though, say, from Waterford, it's faster to get to Belfast than it is to get to Galway. It's even faster to get to Derry, and you've nearly got better roads. And we know the problems they have with the roads in Derry.
Don't get me started. But,
absolutely. Well, come down and take a look at Tipperary while you're at it. But what I will say is we are talking in not necessarily decades, but we're not talking about the next 10 years for definite for this to happen.
Jennifer Kavanagh, that was extremely insightful, and I do feel like I understand the issues around border polling much better after that. So I appreciate your time, Jennifer Kavanagh from the South East Technological University. Thank you for joining us on News Talk Daily. Well, that's it for today. Don't forget you can listen back to this and every episode of the podcast on the Go Loud player or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Just search for News Talk Daily. Until tomorrow morning, from me, Ciara Doherty. Goodbye.